What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's up, guys? The Nation News Podcast. My name is Salman Ali at Red Nation Hoops on Twitter. You're joined by Forrest Walker at Do Nots on Twitter. How you doing, man?
Doing okay for now. I think I might be getting sick, but that's okay. That's my problem, not yours.
I love podcasting with you, man, because you just like roll with the punches and you're like super flexible. Like for the listeners, like you guys have no idea how difficult it is to book podcasts in general. Like to get a consistent co-host, like it's damn near impossible for your schedules to align. And Forrest, like, I can just message him anytime during the day, like, can we podcast tonight? And 99% of the time, he'll just say, yeah, like, I'm good, like, I'm free. And he'll just, like, clear whatever he's doing up for me. And then today, like, I gave him a time, and I was late to the time. And he was more than willing to cooperate with me. So, you know, I appreciate that. I do appreciate you being so flexible with me.
Well, hey, it's easy. I spent a lot of time at home.
So what I have for today's podcast is, you know, there's not really much going on in the Rockets off season. I mean, it's pretty much over at this point. I don't suspect there'll be anything until the trade deadline or buyout market as far as actual transactions. I think we're pretty much the roster we have right now, I think, is going to be the complete roster. So we can go ahead and get into the more fun stuff and grade everything. And you know, we have some objectives to go through for today's podcast, but yeah, we're gonna start with grading the Rockets off season. So the way I thought about this is, I just say we be up front, we give our grade, and then we explain why we gave our grade. And I might have a controversial grade, so I'm gonna let you go first and give the Rockets a grade and just tell us why you gave them that grade.
You're not gonna like this. I'm giving them a C. Now, okay. It's funny because I don't necessarily think that it's their fault that it's been kind of a disappointing offseason. Not terrible, but just kind of disappointing. But it is nonetheless. For what it's worth, I think Trevor Ariza, for all his warts, was still helpful in the defense especially. He was a steadying presence, and he will be missed. Lucas Chardon-Bahamute was excellent when he was actually on the floor. I honestly think that if he hadn't dislocated his shoulder that second time, we would be having a very different discussion about the Rockets this summer. But his loss also stings, and I don't know that the players they have brought in are going to be sufficient to get them ahead of where they were last season. And that's really the bar for them. They needed to be ahead of where they were last season. And I know it's a very high bar, but that's the bar you earn for yourself when you're as good as they are. So I don't really think that they made a mistake necessarily by letting Ariza go. And I actually suspect that we might find that Luke is not good this season. His shoulder might have really messed him up, but be that as it may, I just don't see it as an improvement. I think they fell behind expectations. Now, potentially, if they make some kind of a trade soon, then it's a different story. But assuming that this offseason is complete, it seems like a C to me. Acceptable, but not good.
Okay, all right. That's totally understandable. So I'm going to give my grade, but before I give my grade, I want to explain a couple things going into this. So last year I gave the Rockets pretty much an A++, whatever. Like, it was, I thought in the moment, I thought it was a fantastic offseason. I loved every move they made. I loved the Chris Paul trade. I loved getting PJ Tucker and Luka Mbamute for the minimum. I loved everything they did last offseason. So I gave them an A+. And this offseason, I'm going to grade them a little tougher, but I think a lot of you are going to be shocked with the grade I give them. And before I give you that grade, I'm going to explain one thing. I'm giving them a grade for their entire offseason, not just one or two moves, or just moves on the margins, or everything that happened since they got eliminated in the playoffs. Their entire offseason is what I'm grading them off of. So I gave them a B. I didn't give them a B+. I didn't give them a B-. I didn't give them a C+. And those were the grades I was debating between. I was seriously considering giving them a C+. I was seriously considering them giving them a B-. And I briefly thought about giving them a B+. But I'm going to settle on a B. And I'll explain it. So offseason starts. And obviously the kickoff to the offseason is the NBA draft. And I thought they knocked that out of the park by getting De'Anthony Melton in the second round. You know, I thought that was one of the steals of the draft, getting him at 46, a first-round talent. So they get points for that, in my opinion, you know. The second reason I liked their offseason, but I didn't love it, they gave Chris Paul a 4-year deal and not a 5-year deal. Avoiding the fifth year, you know, like, you would have preferred giving Chris Paul a 2-3-year deal in the Rockets. I'm sure they probably wanted to do that, but you get points for not giving him that fifth year, because that fifth year could have been ugly. A 4-year deal still might not be pretty for Chris Paul, but a 5-year deal would have been brutal. And you get points for not giving him that. Also, getting Gerald Green back for the minimum, I get slight bonus points for that. And possibly the biggest reason I really liked their offseason, Clint Capella for the deal that he signed, $80 million in guaranteed money for 5 years, is a great deal for Clint Capella. And the Rockets really utilized their leverage properly. They didn't panic and give him a 5-year max on July 1st or whatever. They were patient with him, and they got a good deal. I feel like both sides got a better deal than what is being talked about. Like, I don't think Clint Capella got robbed. I think it's really, really difficult to turn on $80 million in guaranteed cash. So I think Clint Capella came out pretty well here, considering the amount of leverage he lost in the draft with the Suns drafting Ayton, and with the Mavericks signing DeAndre Jordan, and all these teams just picking up centers left and right, and the market was dried up for cash. Like, I thought what Clint Capella ended up with was fine. Like, I thought it was, you know, you considering the amount of leverage you lost in the beginning stages of free agency, I thought they came out pretty well here. Both camps came out really well, so they got major points for that. And for the rest of their offseason, the reason I didn't give them anything higher than a B is, you know, I didn't like the Carmelo Anthony signing. I didn't like the Michael Carter Williams signing. I didn't, you know, like, James Ennis was a signing I liked, but there's a gamble there too. He's probably going to play more minutes now than he'll ever play at any point in his career, and we don't know if he's up to it. It's going to be a bigger role for him, and so all of their signings seem to be gambles in some way, you know, shape or form. And other than the people they brought back, none of their signings felt safe, and that's why I didn't give them an A or a B+, or, you know, anything higher than what I gave him. And losing Luka Mbamute and Trevor Ariza combined, it's obviously a brutal hit, but I thought giving Trevor Ariza $15 million annually is a mistake. Luka Mbamute, on the other hand, I think they really should have tried to bring him back, but they did hang on to their taxpayer mid-level exception, or at least most of it. You know, they gave bits and pieces to Isaiah Hartenstein, and they're about to give a piece of it to, you know, De'Anthony Melton. So they're gonna end up coming out with their taxpayer mid-level exception. So, you know, you get points for not giving Carmelo Anthony that. you don't you get points for that. So that's why I'm giving him the.
Yeah, but they still lose points for bringing him on in the first place.
sure. That's why I didn't give him a day.
Yeah, I mean, the big question with Trevor Ariza is how it's going to affect their chemistry, in my opinion. Because, and moreover, their communication on defense, stuff like that. His team defense is extremely good. He's a really, like, stabilizing presence. He became kind of a glue guy. He ended up being kind of that classic Shane Battier type dude who you want on your team, even though all of his success is not necessarily on the stat sheet. And we don't really know. That's very hard to quantify. I mean, it could be that all that really matters is Harden and Chris Paul and Clint Capella, and that everyone else just kind of buys in. It might not be a big deal. I think there's a very good chance that they come into the season and they might win even more games this year, because you know, increased chemistry between those three players, especially with Chris Paul. Or it could be that they lose a lot more games because things aren't as easy and as exciting for them, and they end up dropping a bunch of games they shouldn't drop, and Carmelo doesn't work out. I think there's a very, like you said, none of these signings are safe. And that's kind of what it comes down to. There's nothing in there that I say, yeah, that was great. Like, I think Ennis is like the closest to that because he seems like a pretty good replacement for Luke if things go well. And if things don't go well, it's not a big deal. He's signed to a minimum contract. But even the Melo signing, where he signed for a minimum, even that has a high upside and a high downside. I don't know what to expect. I don't think they did anything wrong. Like, once again, I really think that it might be that they devaluated Lucas Chardin-Bamute's shoulder and said, it's not worth this, in which case it's still a problem. They still lost that production.
Sure. And my take is they got the important things right, right? Like they brought back Chris Paul, they brought back Clint Capella, and, you know, they obviously didn't bring back a wing, and that was, I thought, a priority for them. So they do get docked for that. But I mean, for what they did, towards the end of their season, like, if they signed Melo for the taxpayer MLE, or if they traded their first round draft pick, or if they didn't, or if Clint Capella signed his qualifying offer, like, they probably would have got a D for me. But because Melo signed for the minimum, and because they still have their 2019 first, and because, you know, Clint Capella signed for a long term offer sheet ended up being a really, really good deal. Like, they get points for that. Like, they got a lot of clutch points because towards the end of their offseason, it got a lot better. There are avenues to improve that they've left on the table midseason. Like, they have their 2019 first, and they have their taxpayer MLE. And obviously, they don't have to worry about Clint Capella being an unrestricted free agent next summer anymore. And that's why I ultimately ended up giving them the B, because they didn't screw up potential avenues to improve.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a real possibility when they were interested in Carmelo Anthony.
I think a place where we disagree also, which we've noticed before, is that I think it is more prudent in this situation to make whatever move they're going to move now, bring in whoever they're going to bring in, if it's going to be a trade now instead of waiting till later. And I think you are more wary of like the higher price that may entail. So I kind of held that against them a little bit. That I think they really do need to just make a move. They need to bring in who they're going to bring in. If they're going to bring in, you know, James Johnson or whatever, just go ahead and do it. Just get him ready in the system. Like, they're so close that they need to try to do it. They need to mortgage the future for the present a little bit, in my opinion. But I think we differ on that.
How about the money situation? Do you feel like they get points for being responsible with their money this offseason, or do you feel the other way? Do you feel like they were being too prudent?
To be determined. I mean, $15 million is too much for Trevor Ariza. If it was literally just like, if he was like, I'm going to go take $15 million, that's it, then yeah, of course they shouldn't have given him that. That is too much. And it's a bad situation to be in because you'd like to bring back Trevor Ariza, but you can't justify spending more than like 10 a year on him. You just can't. It's not reasonable, and then once again, like, if Luke just wanted more than they could offer him, then there's nothing I can do. So they've made a lot of nice those ones. I don't know how you judge the money on a lot of other stuff, like the Clint Capella move, that signing there. I like that signing a lot for the team. I like it less for Clint, but I like it enough. It's, as you said, it's not so bad of a deal that he's going to have hard feelings. I think it's fine. it's very team friendly, and you can't, and it's not, but it's not too team friendly that it's got to alienate him. The Chris Paul deal is as good as you could have gotten, and they made a lot of other little deals around the edges to try to clip some of this salary tax off and prepare themselves for the long haul. So those ones where they're not really sacrificing anything, like the Nanu deal, stuff like that, those are good. So I think that they're prudent, but not overly so. But we'll see more as the season goes on how much we can judge them.
Do you feel like they've improved the bottom end of their bench? Like, they may not have improved the top end, but I think there is a case to be made that perhaps their 10 to 15 rotation, they've improved. Like, they got rid of Joe Johnson. They got rid of Chinonu Onuaku. They got rid of a lot of, I mean, I don't like to say this word, but they got rid of a lot of dead weight. Like, you know, and I feel like getting guys like, you know, Melo, even though I don't like Melo, getting guys like MCW, even though I'm not a fan of MCW, like, those guys are definitely better than Chinonu Onuaku.
Yeah, for sure.
And yeah, and like, I just feel like, you know, you get points for that. And I think the real reason I'm not docking them too much is because they've left avenues to improve, and I think that they will use those avenues to improve.
Yeah, which kind of makes it a little bit of an incomplete, I guess, but that's fine. Everything's always incomplete. Man, can we know how weird it was that last season when they signed Joe Johnson, people were actually like excited at the prospect of Joe Johnson?
Oh, I was excited. Yeah, like I was so wrong on that. Like, like you know what it is? Like, I think I wasn't ready to believe that he was washed.
He was 37 years old, and as a person who's 37 years old, let me tell you, you washed.
Yeah. Sure, and there was that lasting image from the Jazz in the playoffs the prior year of Joe Johnson being a real fixture in their rotation. So there was that too. I think that convoluted a lot of what we thought of Joe Johnson, and a lot of Utah Jazz people were telling us,
"Yeah,
hey, he's washed."
Yeah, like, he was just abysmal during this season for them, just absolutely unplayable, and that's kind of what it was. So, which is unfortunate because Joe Johnson's great,
And it wasn't just the Joe Johnson signing that everybody got excited of. Like, it was the Brandon Wright signing. Like, remember, Brandon Wright was supposed to be a really nice pickup for the Rockets. And for some reason, like, the signing, I'm not sure if the signing ever materialized. And he had this weird injury. And it was just kind of a situation where the Rockets had come up to an agreement with him, but never really signed him or something like that, right? And it was, like, the Rockets midseason, like their signings were being really, really praised because they didn't give up any assets. And it may have been one of those things where they just picked up guys that weren't able to contribute to NBA teams anymore. And that's unfortunate. And that still could happen this midseason, right? Like that. And if that happens, that will color the way I think of this offseason. Like, if they sign a washed up wing, like, yeah, I was wrong about how I graded this offseason, but I think they'll find somebody, and that's a lot of what's informing how I'm grading them. I really do think they're going to find somebody.
What do you think about this Bazemore stuff?
I think, well, Sam Amick came out a couple of days ago and disputed that this was a thing.
Yeah,
so I'm not sure if it's a thing. And I feel like it's something that Rockets fans have talked into the ether and hoped that it's a possibility, right? Like, if in theory it seems like a really, really good deal for both sides, you know, Ryan Anderson in a first for Bazemore, really clean trade, you can understand why both sides would do it. In reality, NBA trades don't work like that. Like, there are some intangible stuff that the Atlanta Hawks really like about Bazemore, and I know this because I've talked to a lot of bloggers in Atlanta, and I've, you know, asked about Bazemore, and the team really likes Bazemore. Like, they do. They like Bazemore more than the outside world would determine. Like, his contract isn't great, but the team likes him, and they're in a rebuild situation, and they like having vets around them like that. So that's what I've heard from Atlanta Hawks bloggers, that they've heard from the team. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I think it's, I'm not sure if it's a thing. I have a hard time believing that that this trade that we've talked about for God knows 2 months, like, I'm not sure if it's actually materialized into anything, you know, substantial.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's not going to, and it seems like it's mostly just because the price is too high, right? Like, they want Melton as well as that first-round pick to go along with Ryan Anderson or something to that effect, which is a bit steep of a price. I would have expected, like, the 2019 first, maybe a second rounder, and then probably, like, a few dollars to try to offset the difference in cost between the salaries of the two players, because Ryan Anderson makes about, like, what, like $1.5 or $2 million more per year. So,
yeah,
I would expect something like that, but, like, Melton's a big asset to give up. He's a big deal. He's been a large part of the summer for them. So, yeah, I guess it is really, like... I really like Bazemore. I mean, I think everyone's expectation with the Hawks is that they're going into a hard rebuild and they might as well just maximize the assets they pick up. And that would follow that. I mean, like, what do they care if, you know, what should they care if they win games this coming season? What should they care if it's Ryan Anderson instead of Kent Bazemore being that, like, kind of veteran presence, I guess, which it's weird to think of Bazemore being a veteran because he hasn't been in the league for all that long, but he's like 29. But apparently, you know, they prefer his – they like his intangibles. They like the guy. They want him around. And so they're willing to value that highly, which, you know, that's their business. But it did kind of throw a monkey wrench in the imagined plans of Rockets fans everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, it felt – again, like, it makes a lot of sense on paper. I'm not sure if it's that easy. And on the other hand, I do think there's some smoke to the James Johnson stuff. Like – it seems like if you heard the last low post, it seems like the Miami Heat are really, you know, making some phone calls around the league. Like Zach Lowe,
they better
alluded
be
to this. Yeah, like it looks like they really want to clean up their cap sheet or something. Like they might be up to some stuff, and so I can see a James Johnson move or a Tyler Johnson move, you know, as more of a possibility than Bazemore. And I don't know. I ultimately don't think they're going to make a move yet. Like, I think it's possible they make a move for one of these players, but it doesn't happen until, like, February, right? Like, it's all these names that we're mentioning. Like, it's not a done deal that they won't acquire them. It's just a matter of if and when, right? And, like, that's kind of where I am with the Rockets acquiring another wing. It's possible that they do. I just think going into the season, they have guys to fill those minutes, and I don't think they particularly care too much about being a complete roster on July 1st, on the first day of training camp. I don't think they particularly care about this, and I've found video clips of Daryl Morey talking about this. Like, Daryl does not care about how the roster looks going into training camp. Like, he just cares about how it looks going into the playoffs, and I think that's how the Rockets are looking at this. Like, I think they see this as incomplete as well. And, you know, this is kind of the way the Rockets finished their offseason last year. I mean, if you remember, the Rockets really, really needed another guard going into the season last year. And they just never ended up trading for one. You remember there was a lot of fantasy trade talk going into last season about acquiring another guard, remember? Like, there was a lot of talk about... you know, okay, can this be the fourth guard? Can this be the fourth guard? And I feel like that's what's happening right now. Daryl just doesn't seem to want to finish it all at once. It's not of interest to him. Like, he wants to maximize the assets as best as possible before the playoffs. And I think that's what's going on. Like, they might find someone on the buyout market that will fill those minutes as good as James Johnson or whatever. Like, I think that's probably what's going to happen. I think they're probably going to hold on as long as they can until they find the best possible deal or the best possible buyout candidate.
Yeah, I guess that's the case. I would prefer it not to be the case because, once again, I think that helps to have guys in the system longer. I think working
there is value to
that. I think this is different from getting a fourth guard by a bit, because this is presumably somebody who might even be a starter depending on what they're going to do with Melo. Right, they need a Trevor Ariza quality player, which Trevor Ariza is not as good as people thought he was this last season. I think getting a Trevor Ariza quality player is not an undue challenge, but it is not nothing, and that's a bigger rotation piece than, you know, the guy who can run garbage time or play whenever other guys are hurt. So I don't know. I think they'll balance it. I hope that they just go ahead and pick somebody up just because I think it would help the team out a bit. And it would settle everybody down. I think it'd be good for the universe just to make everybody chill out for a minute if they like traded for Courtney Lee or something.
Can we talk about the guys they did pick up for a second? Because I wrote a piece on James Ennis, and I want to talk about him for a second because I feel like he's been the guy that no one's really talked about, and he might end up being a key cog for the Rockets. Like, yeah, he might end up playing 30 minutes per game, like, going into the season. And it's surprising that no one's really talked about him. All the talk's been around Carmelo Anthony, and, like, in reality, like, James Ennis is the one that probably should be getting the most attention. Like, this guy might end up being the opening day starter. We have no idea. And either way, he's probably going to be the more important player in a Warriors series. And I feel like just no one's talking about him. Like, it's just the signing that went under the radar.
It's just no one knows anything about him. You know, nobody watched him play on those on the Grizzlies or briefly on the Pistons.
Right. And, like, to me, he was by far the most interesting signing of the summer, the signing I liked the most. And, you know, when I was in Vegas out there, there was a real buzz when the Rockets signed James Ennis. Like, apparently the Rockets brass was, like, really happy at that signing. Like, I heard they're, like really happy that they got James Ennis because that was, you know, that was somebody that they really believe in. Like, they've, in the media, they've even said, like, they are a fan of the James Ennis signing. They believe there's untapped potential there. And I wrote a column about this, like, this week, and I was like, I compared this signing to, like, Joe Ingles in that I don't think he's going to be as good as Joe Ingles, and by any means, but I just think it's a similar type of signing in that they're asking this person who hasn't played significant starter minutes or significant NBA rotation minutes at all, is a pretty good player, but hasn't really proven, he's not really that proven, to step into a bigger role. And it's just an interesting gamble because I think the Rockets have a lot riding on this because as of this moment, James Ennis is going to be the guy that guards Kevin Durant in a Warriors series. Like, as of this moment, he's going to be the guy, right? Yeah. It's going to be some combination of James Ennis and PJ Tucker guarding Kevin Durant in a Warriors series, right? And I think it's been under-talked about. Like, this guy is a guy that the Rockets picked up kind of midway through his career and they believe internally that there's some untapped potential there. He's been a pretty good defender throughout the course of his career. Like, I think for the Grizzlies, like, he was definitely a plus defender. He did a pretty good job on Harden in 2017 when the Rockets played the Grizzlies in the regular season. And, like, I think they really like him. I mean, by all accounts, they do really like him. And I think this is someone that they believe can give you, like, Trevor Ariza minutes without the Trevor Ariza price tag.
Yeah, I think there's a good chance he'll be that good too. For what it's worth, his numbers are pretty similar to those of Lucas Chardin-Bahamute in an overall sense. Like, if his general quality is on the same level with a vaguely similar profile, that he's a good defender, and he has an offensive game and he can shoot some threes, right? Because honestly, Luke was better on offense than Trevor was this last season, which I think a lot of people didn't realize that. And honestly, I think that Luke was better than Trevor Ariza last season. I think a lot of people outside of
I've been all over this, dude. Yeah. Like, and I feel like we're on an island here. I had no idea that you were on the same boat as me, by the way, up until this moment.
Yeah.
Like, I've been all over this. Like, I felt like I was on this island alone. I think Luke Mbamute was a bigger loss to the Rockets this offseason than Trevor Ariza. I said that on this podcast. Like, I was really disappointed when he signed with the Clippers.
Yeah, him getting hurt was a huge blow. And that's really what happens, that he got hurt. I think that if he hadn't been hurt, there's, you know, maybe things would have been different. Maybe they would have offered him more. We don't know. We don't know what happened there. But yeah, it was a big deal. He had a better offensive game, and he was honestly more versatile defensively than Ariza was last season as well. And I guess you had to, like, be a particular Rockets fan, watch a lot of Rockets games to see that, but yeah, Ariza's numbers also were not great. I mean, like, after everybody yelled at Matt Moore for a while about his grading of the Rockets, and then he was like, "Oh, well, it looks like Ariza's numbers weren't great last year, but Luke's were." So, hopefully, Ennis can fulfill a similar role. He's got a lot of similar tools. He's a good shooter. I think he's going to fit right in. Once again, of course, with the, you know, he's not super proven, so it's still a question mark, but it's a question mark that is not going to go particularly bad, I think, which is sort of the name of the Rockets offseason in general, that it's not clear how things are going to go, but it's not like we won't expect them to go badly. Which it's just not clear that they're going to go as well as they need them to.
I would say this signing has the most upside out of any signing they made this
year. Yeah, I think that's right.
And I think that the Rockets, like, again, I think they really do believe that he's going to play major minutes for them in the playoffs. And like, both sides have a lot riding on this. It's not just the Rockets. Like, the Rockets obviously need Ennis a lot, right? He is going to be their best wing defender as of this moment, other than PJ Tucker. And he's on a player option for next year on a minimum contract. And like, I think he wants to decline that. Like, I think he wants to become a free agent again next summer instead of taking a minimum deal next year. I think he wants to earn big, his, for the first time in his career, I think he wants to earn big NBA money. So he has a lot riding on this as well. I think he's pretty motivated to make this work and become a much better player than what he's shown. And I think it's possible that he probably is a better player than what he's been given the opportunity to become. He just hasn't had a lot of opportunities. Like, the stops he's been at, there has been someone in front of him to soak up a lot of minutes from him. Like, you can trace this with James Ennis. Like, he just hasn't had the opportunity. The one time he did was in New Orleans, when the New Orleans Pelicans were like hit with like a rash of injuries, and he stepped up. He shot 44% from three, and he was playing like 30 plus minutes a night, and he was shooting like 6 threes a game. So it wasn't a limited sample size. Like, the guy was legitimately awesome for a stretch there for the Pelicans, and I think the Rockets saw that, and I think they believe that if given the opportunity, he can produce a lot more than he's shown. I think this is a gamble, but I think this is a safe gamble that there's more there.
Yeah, I mean, I agree this is probably their most enthusing, you know, their most most, there's the most upside here. I think they could be, that he could be really good. And that is a thing that they're going to look a lot smarter if he turns out to be a very solid signing. Like, if he can easily, you know, if he's better than Ariza was last season, which is not really that high of a bar to clear, if he can help, you know, keep that team defense humming as they need him to, then it's going to look great. They're going to look fantastic. But we'll see how it goes. No, we don't know yet. That's the big problem, is that we just, if they had brought everyone back, if literally the whole offseason had been the draft and then just re-signing all their own free agents and doing nothing else, the ceiling might be lower, I guess, but the floor would also be higher. It'd be easier to have an expectation of what they're going to do this coming season. And I think it's harder. I think their delta is very big right now.
Yeah, I just think it's crazy that no one's talked about him like enough. Like, it just, this guy's going to play, like, he will. As of this moment, he's going to play 30 minutes a night. Like, that's going to happen. This guy's going to play a lot of minutes for the Rockets. And literally all the conversations been about Carmelo Anthony. And Carmelo Anthony is going to play a lot of minutes for the Rockets as well, but I mean, for God's sake, at least mention the guy's name. Like, James Ennis is definitely an integral part of the Rockets' offseason. If they hadn't signed him, I would have given the Rockets a C. Like, I would have really, you know, docked the Rockets hard if they hadn't signed someone like James Ennis. And he's a big part of why I think they've had an okay offseason. I think it's not as bad as people are making it out to be. Now, again, Ennis has a lot to prove. What he's going to be asked to do this year, he's never done throughout the course of his career. For a 20 to 30 game stretch, he hasn't done it for that long before. And I think he'll do well, but again, it's still TBD. And I'm just interested to see how he fares in this environment. I think the Rockets are obviously very excited about it. So it's interesting. It's going to be interesting. You're right. If he works out for the Rockets and he becomes, like, as Zach Lowe said, if he becomes 85% of Trevor Ariza, the Rockets are going to end up looking really smart for signing him for a 2-year minimum deal.
Yep. Well, we'll see how the Rockets look. There's a lot of speculation about that right now.
Yeah, so let's talk about Rockets over-unders. So Westgate came out with the over-unders for the entire NBA, like, I think last week.
Pretty
week
early before. Overall, honestly, too.
Yeah, they usually come out in mid-August, and I was surprised they came out, like, the first week of August.
I guess they think everything's kind of done happening.
Yeah, and for the most part, I feel like it is, right? Like, Kawhi was the last domino.
Yeah.
The last major domino, and I feel like it's... After that, there's not really much, you know. We'll see. The NBA is crazy. I'm not gonna say there's not much left, but like I don't think there's much left. And the Rockets over unders came out, and it's, I'm not sure if I should say it was a surprisingly low number, but it's a number that I feel comfortable saying I take the over on 54.5 wins. That's what Westgate has them as of right now. I'm not sure if they've updated it in the past few days. I don't think they have. But yeah, that's the number right now for the Rockets. And I wouldn't say it's an easy over because I do think the Rockets overachieved their point differential by a little bit last year. Like they were a 61 win team and they won 65 games. And I think that they're probably going to come down to earth a little bit. I think they might win somewhere in the neighborhood of 57 to 59 games. Like I think that's kind of where it's going to happen. Like if you look at through the course of NBA history, when a team wins 60-plus games for a season, they typically go, you know, the next year, there's typically, you know, a coming home period, right? Like, they typically win less games the next year. So I do think they're going to win less games than they did last year. I don't think they're going to win less than 55 games. Like, I have a hard time believing that James Harden and Chris Paul are worth less than 55 games. I think... At least James Harden and Chris Paul are worth 56 to 57 games.
I have a weird take on this, I guess. But that take is that I think that they're probably going to win about 60 games this coming season. Like 59, like, yeah, about 60 is what I think is most likely. But I also think that this is a stay away and that no one should bet on this. Because I do not think it is at all clear that it's going to go well. Like, I think that it probably will go well. I think that it's likely going to be fine and good. But I'm not certain at all in this. There are so many questions, not just on that team, but in the league in general. It's a really weird year. I am not comfortable with anything. I would not touch it. I think they'll probably win. Like I said, they're gonna win. I think they'll win 60 if things track how it looks like they're gonna track. But it's honestly, don't bet on anybody this season. But very much don't bet on the Rockets.
Sure, we are not encouraging anyone to bet. Like, I am simply saying, if I were to go to Vegas, I would feel comfortable taking the over here. I wouldn't say it's an easy over. I wouldn't by any means. I would feel good about taking the over here because I just have a hard time believing, like, James Harden and a bunch of really good fitting role players won 55 games one year, right?
Yeah,
like that's over. That's the over.
Yeah, but the West is better though.
You're right. Yeah,
there's things like I think that's true, but there's also a lot of things to worry about. I mean, just for example, like then you have the Warriors who have an over under of what, like 65 or something. Which is to me crazy.
I would stay away. Yeah, I would stay away from that. That's the line that I do not feel comfortable at all betting
on. Has they given anybody any reason to assume they're going to care about anything at all?
I mean, other than I think they're going to be healthier this year, I don't think they have, right? Like, I just think it's going to be another year where they sleepwalk to like 60 plus games, but they're good enough to sleepwalk to like 66 games. Like, that's kind of why I would stay away. Like, they are talented enough to win like 65 games no problem, just walk into the season, and they were on track to do that before Steph got hurt.
Yeah, so there's a lot of reasons to not be sure about any of this. I mean, it could be that the Rockets they could end up with 54 wins and also be the number one seed in the West. There is that potential scenario, which is super weird, but that's how weird the NBA is right now.
Yeah, the West is going to beat up on each other like crazy this year. But at the same time, I feel like the 8th seed in the West is going to be like 47 games. Like, it might be like last year where, like, the difference between the third seed and, like, the eighth seed is like half game, one game. Like it might be something like that, where like it's going to be really, really difficult to make the playoffs in the West again, and it's going to be where it's going to be a case where all these teams are going to beat the hell out of each other and take wins off each other. And I think the West definitely did improve. Obviously, LeBron James is now in the conference. That's definitely a sign that things are going to get harder for the Rockets to win 65 games. And obviously, they're going to be teams that are going to be dramatically better from last season, because players that either got healthy or teams have traded for players. Like, I think the Spurs are going to be better this year because they traded Kawhi for, you know, who didn't play at all last year, for DeMar DeRozan. And I know they traded Danny Green, but I don't think that's significant enough to where I feel like the Spurs are going to win less than 50 games.
Yeah, well, not to get too much into that, I think you're right in general that, like, there's going to be a lot of teams who are at a pretty similar level of wins. And this is something that everyone needs to remember going into this coming season, which is that, look, if a team wins 47 games in the West this upcoming season, that's not bad. That's actually going to be pretty good.
That's probably worth like 50 games in the East.
At least,
right?
Yeah. Because when there's more teams who are good, it's harder. Like, those wins even out. Right, if you have this, like, they can't all win every single game. Those teams are going to play each other a lot. So if they're all about equal in quality, then you're going to have them all having a similar number of wins, and that number is going to be below 50. And that's just how it is. You know, if you decide that 50 wins is like under 50 wins is embarrassing, then you're going to have a lot of embarrassing teams who are way better than like non-embarrassing teams in the East, perhaps, depending on how, you know, the big three out there go, who are on the same division, by the way. I realized that the other day.
Yeah, like it's crazy. Like, these teams are going to beat the hell out of each other. And it's like the end of the season is right now going to be probably the best part of the season, because you're gonna have all these teams jockeying for playoff positioning. Like, it's like last year it felt like there was a critical game on every night, like if not two or three, and it came down to the very last night of the playoffs the very last night of the regular season till we finally got a hold on where all the seedings were at. Like, it's crazy. Like we're probably gonna get a similar year, if not a crazier year, because players are going to get healthy. Like, Paul Millsap only played like so many games last year, and he will likely play the whole season this year, and that's a game changer. The Nuggets are going to be a lot better. Like, Nikola Jokic is going to take a step up this year. Gary Harris is going to take a step up this year. Jamal Murray, same thing. Like, there's going to be a lot of internal improvement for some of these teams, and I feel like, you know, it's going to be a real slobber knocker, man. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot. It's going to be a lot of fun. I have something to say. The reaction to these over-unders, particularly the Rockets, it's just a heads up to everybody. Like, all this stuff you're saying is fair game. Like, it's fair game because you can't get mad at Rockets fans for reacting the way they do midseason at this point. They have taken a lot of crap the Rockets have taken a lot of crap this summer, and it's just funny watching Rockets Twitter eat this shit up. Like, they are absorbing every single bit of what you're saying about them, and they're saving these tweets, and they're loading up on ammo. And I'm just saying, you cannot get angry at Rockets fans for being the way they are midseason. Like, you can't. If you believe the Rockets are taking a step back this summer, own that opinion and take the bullets midseason. You cannot get angry. You cannot get angry if they surpass your expectations and do not take a step back. Like, that's just my message.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of crow eating one way or the other during this season regarding the Rockets.
Yeah, so I'm just saying, like, all of it's fair game.
Yeah.
Even Rockets fans, like, you got to be willing to take some strays if the Rockets indeed take a step back. But particularly to everyone who said the Rockets have taken a step back, I'm sorry. Be prepared to catch some strays and do not backlash at Rockets fans, because nobody wants to hear that crap. I'm sorry, you can't say that anymore. You can't. Own the opinion, stick by it, and if you're wrong, say you're wrong. Or just don't say anything. Take the bullets.
Someone's going to be wrong. Someone always is. It's not a big deal. People get so weird about it that it's a big deal or not. Yeah, and Rockets fans are like this for a reason. You're right.
I just don't want the backlash towards Rockets fans because, like, they're taking a lot of crap right now, and I don't want I don't want to hear it from everybody. If I'm not here for it. Like, if you guys are wrong on if the Rockets taking a step back, be prepared to take the hits. Like, come into midseason with the bulletproof jacket, because Rockets fans are going to come at you from every angle. And I'm just saying, you got to be prepared for it. Own that opinion, because this fan base in particular is really, really good at holding on to what you say.
Yeah, it's a very vengeful and grudge-filled fan base, and a lot of people really don't like that about Rockets fans, but I don't know what else they would ever be, given that they had to eat, like, 20 years of people denigrating them. So, yeah, Rockets fans remember when you say these things, and Rockets fans know how underestimated the Rockets are year after year after year. So, I mean, this is the year when everyone's underestimation of the Rockets turns out to be true, but there's really only the one year where that happened, where it actually was borne out. So,
yeah, listen, like I'm just saying, if you expect the Jazz to be the second best team in the West, yeah, like take those bullets on the chin. you better be willing to take those bullets, man. And I'm just saying, be careful, or own it. Either way, you cannot take the you cannot be the Rockets fans are so annoying, or Rockets fans are being like, who underestimated the Rockets at the beginning of the season? Nobody. Like, no, you have to own these opinions. You have to take it, like, and you cannot deny what's happening right now. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. That's my rant. That's
just
my rant.
Own it. Yeah, and everyone should just kind of own their sports takes in general. If you don't want to own your takes, don't make that strong a takes.
Yeah.
Like, it's okay. Yeah. You don't have to have a strong take on everything. When you see an over under for a team, you can say, "I don't know. I'm not sure what to do with that one." You can just leave it at that. You don't have to come down and be like, "This team is a real bunch of, you know," and drop some kind of like a talk radio take on what's happening there. No, it's okay. You can just say, "Yeah, I'm not sure how good the Grizzlies are going to be this year."
Yeah, listen, if you believe that Trevor Ariza is the second coming of Scottie Pippen now, be prepared to take the bullets come midseason. That's all I'm saying. And we'll leave it at that. Let's move on to the schedule release, because the NBA did release their schedule this week, and it got leaked, you know, a little bit early, like, you know, as it always does. You know, Christmas Day games got leaked first, then MLK, then, you know, all the other marquee matchups got leaked slowly but surely, and we got a pretty good, you know, picture on how the league views these teams and how the league wants to schedule this. And I guess, did anything initially stick out to you about the Rockets schedule, just looking at it at face value?
It's front-loaded. Everyone's been saying it, but it's just the case. This seems to happen a lot. It didn't happen last year. Last season, the Rockets had a very marshmallow schedule, honestly. This season, it's a fine schedule overall, but they do have a lot of road games early on. They have their longer road trips early on. Like, they have a 5-game road trip that starts at the start of November, which is pretty quickly in there. They have a lot of playoff teams they got to play, which is not surprising given that they're in the West, but they're kind of all packed together. So they don't have very many back-to-backs, which is nice. They have a lot of nationally televised games, more than I expected, honestly. I didn't think it was going to be as many as it is.
Yeah, I thought the Lakers would take away some of these games from other teams, particularly the Rockets, and I was surprised.
I mean, they did, but not from Houston.
Yeah, it's surprising that they have as many as they do. That's 38 games are going to be nationally televised in some form or fashion.
But 10 are NBA TV for what that's worth.
Sure. Yeah, they're going to be on TV a lot. So, I mean, if you're a Rockets fan who doesn't have League Pass or has League Pass but it's blacked out in your area, you're going to have opportunities to see them outside of your local cable provider. There's going to be opportunities. One thing I thought that was interesting, they aren't playing the Warriors on a marquee date. And what I mean by that, they're not playing them opening night. They're not playing them on Christmas Day. They're not playing them on MLK Day. I think it's interesting that their games are going to be spread out aside from those days. Like, the league is saving those for different for different days in the schedule.
Which is interesting. They're really not like focusing on that particular matchup, which is wild because that was the matchup of the playoffs.
And the regular season. Yeah. Like, it was actually a really good regular season matchup, I thought.
Yeah, but I guess, you know, the average person is now a little more excited about watching the Lakers play against people, which makes sense. But the Rockets have a lot of games, but yeah, like you said, they're not all against the teams you'd think. It's not like the Warriors Rockets showcase, which honestly I probably is closer to what I would have wanted to do with those two teams, right? Have some replays of the only good playoff series.
Yeah, I mean, and it looks like the league really wants Celtics Sixers to be a thing. Like, good God, these guys are gonna play each other on all the marquee dates. Like the Celtics and Sixers, like they are openly making that the rivalry of the Eastern Conference. I thought that was interesting. By the way, I am glad that the league understands that Rockets Thunder is a rivalry, because I don't think it's discussed enough how big of a rivalry that is.
Yeah.
Like, no matter what happens, that is a no brainer. Like, it's like the fans really, really care about that. Like the
more than the teams do, not, perhaps.
Yeah, like I think the players actually have a great deal of respect for each other, but the fans absolutely do not like each other. And this is the rivalry that doesn't get talked about enough. And it's going to be on national TV, like, again, the second straight year in a row. And the league, I think the league understands, like, I mean, it must be getting good numbers. Like, it's a real rivalry, man. Like, the Harden and Russ stuff, like, I guess it's just an easy ticket to book for ratings. And I think that's interesting. Also, shout-outs to the league for putting the Jazz on national TV.
Yeah, that's a good and fun team.
Yeah, they earned it. They have earned being on national TV, especially on Christmas Day. I was really happy for their fan base to get that Blazers Jazz matchup on Christmas Day. That is a real coming of age thing when your team finally gets on Christmas Day. Like, I remember when the Rockets first started getting on Christmas Day, and like that was a real story for Rockets fans. Love that. Like they were really happy when, you know, their fun team of Jeremy Lin, Chandler Parsons, and James Harden finally got displayed on national TV. So, you know, congrats to Jazz fans. I am surprised that the Knicks are going to be on Christmas Day again. Like, I don't understand it, because Porzingis is not going to be healthy. And I don't understand what the Knicks have to offer other than their market size for a Christmas Day matchup. I don't think they...
It's market size. A lot of people like the Knicks. A lot of people know who the Knicks are. That ain't nothing.
Sure, but there are so many teams I would have rather had play in the slot. Like, they have a good amount of major market teams that are worth putting on national TV. I don't know why the Knicks have to be one of them. Like the Lakers, the league's premier team, they're going to be on national TV, and they legitimately deserve it this year because they have LeBron James. I don't understand why you have to, like, get greedy and put the Knicks in there, like, sneak it in there, like, no one's going to notice. Like, it just... And I know that the league doesn't cater to diehards, because if they did, they would put, like, matchups like Blazers-Jazz or Celtics-Sixers or, you know, Bucks, you know, Bucks... Raptors on national TV, right? Like those are the kind of matchups we would get if it catered to diehard. So I understand that they have to throw casual fans a bone every now and then. I just don't understand why it has to be this team, because literally they have no star power other than possibly Kevin Knox going into Christmas Day games. Like, Kristaps is going to be injured and he might not come back till January. I don't understand the fixation on putting them on national TV.
Hey, I mean, we don't all get what we want, and sometimes we get what a large amount of people who live in New York want. So, there you have it.
Sure. Anything else stick out at you from the Rockets schedule, or anything on the NBA schedule release?
Not a lot yet. Like I said, I'm gonna be working on doing my schedule analysis, which I do every year. So. I'm going to have a lot of more in-depth thoughts about it pretty soon, but just at this moment, I haven't pored over it enough to really have, like, win predictions and stuff, but I will. I guess the only thing is that they have 12 back-to-backs only, I believe, right? Which is under the average. It is lower than ever this season. The average is like 13.5, which is, even just a few years ago, it was like 15, 16 back-to-backs per team. So this is definitely a lot better. But yeah, it's good. Only 12 this season. That's going to help them out a lot. They have actually a rest advantage from what I've seen. That they'll play more teams on a back-to-back than they will be on a back-to-back. So, yeah, there's reason for hope there, and hopefully they can stay rested and healthy because those things compound themselves. Getting rest makes you able to get more rest because you play better.
Yeah, I feel like they have a really balanced schedule this year. Yep. I have no issues with the schedule at all. Other than perhaps I would have liked to see the Rockets play the Warriors on Christmas Day or opening night. Just one of those two dates would have been nice. To get a Rockets Warriors matchup, but we're gonna get plenty of them beating the brains out of each other.
There's four of them.
There's four of them as opposed to three of them last year. It's gonna be fun. Like those are gonna be the games that I look forward to the most. And fortunately, they're not gonna be on the league's premier dates. One note: I want to campaign the league to make the day after the All-Star break make that a thing. Make that a premier date for you guys, because I feel like there's a craving for basketball. Right after there's no basketball for a week, make that another day for you guys. Like I don't know, like make that a premier day, like the comeback from All-Star break or something. Like, because I feel like during that week, like NBA fans are bored out of their minds because the trade deadline is no longer on that week anymore, which I didn't like how it got moved backwards. But if that week is going to be empty, make that return date really, really, you know, packed. That's my campaign to the league. If anybody in the league office is listening, which I doubt, but if anyone of importance is listening,
Adam,
please campaign.
Adam Silver, I know you're there.
Yeah, because that makes a lot of sense to me. I really like that date as being a premier NBA date.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Everyone's ready for it to come back at that time. Yeah. So it's the doldrums right now. There will be plenty of time to talk about all these things, and we will. But we've entered the dead zone. Another 6 weeks until preseason begins, basically.
For sure. And as far as this podcast in particular, we're gonna try to have guests on, national guests onto this podcast. Take their thoughts on the Rockets. Perhaps some surprise appearances. Perhaps we'll have a preseason podcast. Perhaps we'll have, an overall preview podcast for the season. We are going to have a preview podcast for the season. We do that every year. So, yeah, not promising that's going to be as regular as we've been so far, but we'll try. We'll see what we can do. We are in the doldrums, as Forrest said, but, it'll be interesting to see what other people think of this team, and it'll be nice to get an outside perspective on this team. So, yeah, guys, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Give us a good rating on iTunes if you're into the show. We went an hour long for you in the middle of August. I am 99% sure we are the only NBA podcast in your feed right now. Like, we may be the only people talking Rockets right now at this point in the calendar. So please appreciate that and give us 5 stars on iTunes. It really helps people find the show. And yeah, guys, good night.